From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Our guest is Amalia Andrade. Her book is about fear. It's called Things You Think About When You Bite Your Nails. It's about how fear works, how it takes hold over us, and how it dogs us from childhood, you know, the monsters under the bed, all the way into adulthood, careers, relationships, accidentally sending that risky text to the wrong person. We've all done that, right, Pete?
Never.
Tell me you've done it. You know, all these things that make us want to bite our nails. But it's also a book about that monster our fear can warp into when it grows too powerful. It's a phenomenon we are all too familiar with and that more and more of us are struggling against: anxiety. Amalia spoke with me from Bogota, Colombia, where she lives. Her book is a beautifully illustrated book. Again, it's Things You Think About When You Bite Your Nails. Hope you enjoy this interview. Amalia Andrade, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Such a timely book. Fear and anxiety has dominated many of our lives, and especially in the last 7 months or so. And the interesting thing is that those of us who have never really experienced anxiety before are really learning how to be compassionate now that we know we've had a glimpse into that world. Some people are experiencing more fear and anxiety just piled on top of what they've already had to deal with. Can you set the stage for us? I'm so interested in hearing your story about growing up in a really difficult time in Colombia.
It was crazy, very, very crazy. I was born and I grew up in Cali, Colombia. That was a city very heavily afflicted by the drug cartel wars. And I am lucky in a sense that I was a small kid. I didn't really understand very well the size of the threat. So it was certainly very scary, but I also kind of looked at it through the eyes of a child. So for example, this is something that not a lot of people know, but there was this drug dealer that was denied a visa. And so he decided he was gonna build a replica of the White House near my neighborhood. This is so crazy. And of course he was, I don't know if he was captured or something before he get to finish the replica. So what I used to do as a kid was roller skate inside the replica of the White House. And we were looking, drug dealers in Colombia had something called caleta. Caleta is like a big stash of money. And I was a kid looking for the money. I was like, Mom, you know what? I'm gonna find that caleta and we're gonna go out this country and we won't have to worry about anything else. My mom was like, why don't you just stop skating in that place? It's scary. That was kind of like the innocence in me, but also it was very, very scary. In my school, there was an alarm for bomb threats, and that alarm would go off probably 2 times a week. So this was very crazy. The alarm went off and you just run to the bus to get out. It was very, very hard. And I think it definitely took a toll on me. I think definitely that's where some of my anxiety comes from. But I think it has also taught me to be very resilient and to be creative amidst difficult times, you know?
It's interesting that I'm a little older than you, and I remember that time so well, just hearing of the drug cartels and a lot of kidnappings and things like that. On the world stage, it was huge as well. At some point, even though you had this innocence and you roller skated in the fake White House looking for the caleta, there was anxiety building in you, and it
it was interesting to read in your book how it manifested in asthma and then also the fear of the phobia of vomiting. And I can't, what is that called? I forget the
I have no idea how to say it in English. Yeah. I'm just going to say it in Latin, I think, because every phobia, it's in Latin. Yeah. Emetophobia.
Yeah, emetophobia, yes. So not knowing, that was fascinating to me. Several of my siblings have had asthma their whole lives, and to hear from you that asthma was just a manifestation of anxiety. Talk about that.
I had no idea, of course, until the asthma left me. And I had no idea, actually, until I grew up. And I went to, actually, one of the first questions my therapist asked me as an adult was, did you have asthma growing up? I was like, how do you know it? And she went on saying, yeah, it's an early manifestation of a lot of anxiousness in kids. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just, you know, an illness you're born with. But to me, it was, I remember, and it's crazy to understand how fear works. And that's the reason I wanted to write this book, because I think we are all very familiar with fear. Mm-hmm. We've all felt it. But the way it works, we have no idea how it works. I think we've never took the time. And that's the trap with fear, that fear, it's such a horrible and dramatic feeling that you don't want to dig into it. You don't want to go looking up how it works. Where does this fear started? Why do I feel this way? How is it manifesting? But fear and anxiousness manifest themselves in such a plethora of symptoms. It's crazy. So for me, yes, I was this innocent kid roller skating in the fake White House, but then back at home with all those kidnappings, that was crazy. The kidnappings were crazy. Schools in Colombia, for example, have freedom of cult. So I didn't went to a religious school, but the kidnappings were so often and so many that on Wednesday we used to have like religious services just to pray in whatever religion you wanted for the freedom and for the well-being of all those people. And this was every Wednesday. So it's crazy. So on the outside, I was like a happy kid doing my stuff. But when I went back home, when I felt vulnerable at night, the asthma would kick in. Mm-hmm. And then the fear of vomiting, that is still with me. Because when you never face fears that come to you or present themselves when you are very small, it's very hard to fight them as an adult. So those were my manifestations of the things that were going on in my country, in my city, but also within my family. I was adopted. My mother adopted me being a single mother. And then within a year, my mother married and then got pregnant. And that was amazing. And my father, then he adopted me and I love my brother, but this was so fast to me. And I was a little kid. I didn't have the tools or the words to, you know, explain to mom, hey, I'm afraid. I'm afraid maybe you will leave me. I'm like, there was a mother that already left me. So why are you gonna do this? But of course you're a kid. So I wasn't gonna have those conversations with my mother. So instead, I got stuck with asthma.
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Amalia Andrade. She is an author and an illustrator. She's come out with a new book called Things You Think About When You Bite Your Nails. It's a fear and anxiety workbook. I love the illustrations. You're very well known in Colombia as an author and an illustrator and a cartoonist. Tell us a little bit about your career and why you got to the point of writing this book. And really, who is it for? Is it for children, teenagers, adults, everyone?
It's for everyone. Don't be fooled by the illustrations. You may think the illustrations are for kids or for teenagers, but it's for everybody. That is one thing I actually like about fear. And is that in a world that is so concentrated on separating us in a world that is so divided. We are all the same upon the face of fear. Mm-hmm. We have all felt fear. Fear knows no race, no gender, no class, nothing. It's there for everybody. So I think this book is for everyone who is experiencing fear, who wants to beat fear, who wants to understand fear, who wants to approach fear with a more compassionate, you know, approach. My story of how I became an illustrator actually has a lot to do with fear, because I went to school, I studied literary studies, and I have no professional background on illustration or art. I was told as a kid that I was not a very good drawer. I was not very good at art. And then because of fear of not being good enough, I just stopped. And one day I was questioning myself and I was like, why have we bought into this crazy thought that being an adult is forgetting what you have always loved to do? Mm-hmm. That to me is so crazy. Like, you were almost born knowing what you like to do. It was such an amazing feeling for me to draw. I could spend hours and hours drawing. And then one day I was like, yeah, no, I'm not gonna do that anymore because now I'm an adult. What? That is crazy. And you know, in that process of me beating fear, of me understanding fear and the limitations it brought to my life, I was like, I don't have to be Picasso. I just like it. And when you love something very much, when it brings you to yourself, when it connects you with something that makes you, you know, vibrate inside, keep doing that. You know, it doesn't matter if people tell you you're good or not. Do it. Never stop. So yeah, that's how I became an illustrator.
You know, it's interesting that I think at a certain point as adults, we strive to become children again, right? We strive to recapture the things that made us feel so alive as children. We get little glimpses of it. I do. And I go, oh yeah, this is how I felt as a kid when I experienced this thing. It was such a good feeling. So we should always try to recapture that childlike curiosity or whatever it is. I'm interested in knowing, you've done so much research on fear and anxiety, and it has led you to the stories of others and what they experience as fear and anxiety. And they manifest in very strange ways. Talking about Oprah, for example, and her fear or her anxiety. I guess it's one and the same word, right?
Yeah, that to me, that blew my mind when I was doing that research and I came upon that Oprah story. And at the beginning, when I was doing the research, it came out and I was like, no way. That woman is so powerful and, you know, she's so inspiring. And of course, she's not perfect. I actually love that about her. She's very, you know, human. She's very vulnerable. But when I read that Oprah is really afraid of chewing gum, it gave me such, it blew my mind. Was like, it is so crazy how it manifests. And also it is so crazy how these tiny things affect us. And for me, what is very important about this research and about telling you and the readers of this book that there's other people that are afraid about these things is that we have a belief in ourselves, right? Whatever it is, we all have insecurities, but we let our fears attack us so bad. So for example, I'm like, okay, I'm an author. I'm doing good in my life. I'm fighting for my dreams. I'm reconciling with that child I was. I'm having fun. And then I'm put on a plane. And I am so afraid of planes, you have no idea. And I cry like a baby sometimes. When it gets really bumpy, I cry. And in that minute, I'm like, I'm not worth it. Look at me. How am I ever gonna be Oprah? I'm not going to be able to fly anywhere. Look at me crying. And then you look to the person next to you who's sleeping, like drooling. You're like, why? Why am I not like that person? And your self-esteem goes, it hits rock bottom. And for me, it's very important for everybody to not buy into that. Don't let your fear make you feel less. Everybody has them, and everybody becomes tiny when faced to their biggest fears. So it's okay first, and then understand it. Understand your fear. When you understand it, you're going to be more compassionate about yourself, and you're going to be, you know, living this world. There are fears you're going to get over. There are fears that aren't going to go away, but it's okay. Everybody has fears. I think what we need to do is we need to relate better with our fears. I am saddened that we live in a society that is so harsh with us. Mm-hmm. In a society that makes you, to me, you have no idea to me how crazy it is to understand that we live in a society that has taught us that there are good feelings and bad feelings. Mm-hmm. It blows my mind. That is so wrong. There are many things that are wrong with our society and with this world. But one way they're, you know, and I feel very offended by this, because their politics, their policies that are against us, there are, you know, things you can measure very well that you say, okay, this world is not okay because this or that. But the fact that we live in a society that is messing with our hearts, that to me is like, no, don't buy into the idea that there are good and bad emotions. They're just emotions. You are a whole human being. You're supposed to have them all. You are good the way you are. If you feel more fear than joy, that's you. That's okay. Just understand it. We live in a society, we understand happiness, we understand it. There's 1,000 movies about happiness. There's 1,000 movies about joy. We're being pushed about be successful, be better, be more mindful. You know, this, I call it the tyranny of wellness. Don't talk about wellness. Talk about being human. Talk about fear. It's okay to be afraid, you know?
This is so interesting you bring up the point, because I feel like even in the last 10 years, we have looked at mental health challenges in such a way that we're really trying to destigmatize and to say that, you know, many people suffer from fear, from anxiety, from depression, from OCD, from whatever it might be. And these kinds of afflictions or conditions or challenges know no boundaries in terms of socioeconomic, you know, anyone. And that's, I feel like it's a good thing now, because there is no family that is immune to having someone with these sorts of challenges. And as you say, it's human. And so let's take it on. And this is one of the things that you do in your book, is you help people find out what they fear, or if they're struggling with fear and anxiety. And I like some of the, I mean, so let's talk about the workbook portion of your book, because there are great questions that you get at to try to help us find out what we fear.
Yes. Sometimes fear can speak very loudly, but it can also swallow you. Maybe you have no idea. You have no idea how much of your life you're living in fear, or how much you are not doing because of fear. Mm-hmm. And I think this book, and I said at the beginning, this is going to be kind of scary, but we're going to do this together. And of course, people begin reading and they go with the fears they know, they're familiar with. And then as they start reading, they're like, oh, here comes another fear. And here comes another fear. Or I thought this fear was awful, but what is really awful is my fear of success. That is crazy. People think that nobody fears success. Of course, people fear success. We actually fear success a lot. Or my fear of commitment, or my fear of being vulnerable, or something like that. So I think that the book has many questions, it has many exercises, it has many tools for you to get to know your fear, how it works, how to be compassionate towards it. If you have an anxiety disorder, if you are old to anxiety, or if you're new to anxiety, to know that you're not alone, that there are certain tools that are gonna help you navigate those times, and that certainly mental health is key. It's very important. We need to talk about mental health more. We need to socialize more our fears. We need to talk about this stuff. I actually think there's a lot of power between this. And I think, of course, I think about, have you ever read or heard Brené Brown?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We've spoken to her several times on this show. Brené Brown is wonderful.
Oh my God.
As you're talking.
You are so lucky. I am such a big fan of Brené. And I think vulnerability is key. And I think fear and vulnerability are linked. And Brené is, I love her power because she, I love her work, sorry, because I think it's very powerful. Her way of, you know, promoting and saying, hey, there's power in this. And I think there's also a lot of power in fear. It has a bad reputation, but it can help you grow so much. And it can help you, understand others. And to me, it's very important that you understand how fear works, because you're going to understand how you, I don't know, how you respond to the way fear governs you. But I think this book is also going to give you the tools for you to recognize when fear is being used upon you to govern you in a political way, you know?
The scenarios that you give among the questions in trying to identify your fear, it's interesting because you pick speaking in public. Of course, that's a huge fear of people. Going to the dentist every day, being in a plane crash, getting 100 shots in a single visit to the doctor, or needing to call your cable or internet provider who's unable to solve anything ever, making you feel like you're going mad, which these are all so they're funny. I mean, and this is what you bring, is you bring humor to the fact that we, many of us, have these fears. And it's funny, I thought everyone hated going to the dentist and feared it. And I didn't realize that it's just my personal fear, because lots of people love going to the dentist. And I can't.
Who are those people? What's wrong with them?
And then I don't fear speaking in public. I guess it's because of what I do, and I practice it a lot. But people would rather die than speak in public. This overwhelming task of calling your internet provider as a real fear, I realize I have that too.
I have that fear. That is, I fear that almost as much as I fear airplanes, I'm telling you. Like, I would fight my wife, like, please, you make that call. Like, I'm not going to make that call. Please, please don't make me. And it's crazy because they gaslight you. It's so, like, the techniques they use are so coercive. It's like, what is happening? Why are you treating me like I'm a crazy person? It's heavy.
That's big. Well, let's just take that one. We only have a minute or so left, but let's quickly take that one about calling your cable or internet provider when it makes you feel crazy. What are the suggestions that you're bringing forth in your book for this sort of scenario?
Well, for this scenario, this really particular scenario, I would recommend just trying to meditate before, getting yourself calm. And in my book, I have this exercise that has really helped me a lot with situations like this, and it's set yourself to win. And this is a really amazing thing that professional athletes do. And it's, for example, people who do BMX races. What they do is that they, from the beginning, they're like, okay, this is what I'm gonna go. This is every turn I'm gonna go faster in here, slow in here. They set themselves to win from the beginning. When you're calling your cable operator and you're gonna head yourself to that call from hell, just, you know, set yourself to win. play the movie in your head, go every turn, you know what's gonna happen, and it's gonna be easier to navigate those scary and awful times.
That is Amalia Andrade, and her book is Things You Think About When You Bite Your Nails, a Fear and Anxiety Workbook.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.